Hey, everybody. How are you?
Super.
All right, good deal. Hey, we are in the final week of our teaching series called Game Day. We are looking at the playbook that God has given us as the church, and more specifically, our playbook as a church here at Revolution. We are going to pick up this week where the Mars Hill story ends and talk a little bit about the power of replication. And this is an important value of the playbook. Let's read that this morning from Acts chapter 18. We'll read verses 1 through 3 and then skip down to verse 18. And we'll do that with some chutzpah. That had no chutzpah. With some chutzpah. Here we go. After this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth. There he met a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. Paul went to see them, and because he was a tent maker as they were, he stayed and worked with them. Paul stayed on in Corinth for some time. Then he left the brothers and sailed for Syria, accompanied by Priscilla and Aquila. Before he sailed, he had his hair cut off at Cenchrea because of a vow he had taken. They arrived at Ephesus, where Paul left Priscilla and Aquila. He himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. When they asked him to spend more time with them, he declined. But as he left, he promised, "I will come back if it is God's will." Then he set sail from Ephesus. When he landed at Caesarea, he went up and greeted the church and then went down to Antioch. After spending some time in Antioch, Paul set out from there and traveled place to place throughout the region of Galatia and Phrygia, strengthening all the disciples. Meanwhile, a Jew named Apollos, a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. He was a learned man with a thorough knowledge of the scriptures. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and he spoke with great fervor and taught about Jesus accurately, though he knew only the baptism of John. He began to speak boldly in the synagogue. When Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they invited him to their home and explained to him the way of God more adequately. When Apollos wanted to go to Achaia, the brothers encouraged him and wrote to the disciples there to welcome him. On arriving, he was a great help to those who by grace had believed. For he vigorously refuted the Jews in public debate, proving from the scriptures that Jesus was the Christ. Awesome. You know, one of the most underrated quarterback teams of the last 5 years might just be that of Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick, San Francisco 49ers. You might know or might not know the story, so I'll rehash it for you a little bit. San Francisco, since the days of Joe Montana back in the 80s, they sort of, you know, did pretty well in the 90s, and then they went downhill pretty fast. And Alex Smith comes along, and he comes in one of the low times of 49ers history. He becomes their quarterback in about 2006. He works with them. The team grows. The team builds. Get into the playoffs in 2011 and 2012. Alex Smith gets hurt. And there's this kid behind him named Colin Kaepernick. And so during his rehabilitation, the time his body's healing and what have you, Smith is going to mentor Kaepernick. Now, the interesting thing was later that season, Smith got healthy again, and the coach said, "You know what? Sorry, we're going to stick with the kid." And so Kaepernick was named the starting quarterback for the 49ers. And what Smith decided to do was mentor him anyway. "I'm going to mentor you anyway." And so the 49ers, they end up making it into the Super Bowl that year, which had to be kind of a bummer for Alex Smith, right? Because here's a guy, he's helped raise the team from sort of the dust of the earth to new life, and now he doesn't get to participate in the biggest game that any football player wants to participate in. And so the season ends, and the next season, the 49ers decide to trade Smith to the Chiefs. And at the time, the Chiefs were pretty bad. But it worked out great for Alex Smith, because the next year, wouldn't you know it, they get Alex Smith, the Chiefs do. They make it to the playoffs, and there you go. So why am I telling you this story? I'm telling you this story because it demonstrates a very simple spiritual principle that we're going to talk about today, and that is the power of replication. The power of replication. I think it's admirable in many ways that in a culture of individualism, Smith put the needs of the team before his own personal needs. You don't see that a whole lot today, do you? It's usually about me, and then if it works out okay for you, well, then that's great. But here in this situation, Smith decides whether or not he gets to play, he's going to help this young kid out. He's going to help him grow into who he's supposed to be as a team player and as a member of the San Francisco 49ers. A quarterback selflessness in the end gave a chance for a team to run its playbook and fulfill its vision of being champions. And I think as we talk about replication, this is a growing edge for our church as well as churches all across the world. How do we replicate our vision, our values, our culture? How do we fulfill the vision of transforming lives by joining Jesus in the revolution of giving, of serving, and teaching? Well, the only way we can do this is if we pour life into other people. Because people have first poured their life into us. And what kind of life is that? It's the life of Christ. It's the life of Christ. You know, if you want to begin a movement, you have to replicate the culture. Right? You replicate the culture, and the culture grows like wildfire. The success of the early church was that Paul, we'll start at Jesus, because that's never a bad place to start, right? Jesus had 12 people who he poured life into. Then he had Paul who he poured life into. And these folks head out all throughout the ancient world, and they pour the life of Christ into other people. They replicate the vision of the kingdom. What's the vision of the kingdom? The great commandment of loving God with all we are and loving our neighbor as ourselves, and the great commission of making disciples. This is what we've been talking about in our playbook. I had a great mentor that I served under in my first church, my first full-time church, I should say. His name was Tom. And what I loved about Tom was a humble, selfless, hardworking guy. I mean, I knew it from the first minute I met him. In fact, I used to tease him that he was the Iron Man of Kentucky Methodism. Because you could not, no matter how hard you worked out work, Tom, I wouldn't even try. He's the Iron Man of Kentucky Methodism. And Tom, when I came to my first church, my first full-time church, I made a pretty big ask of Tom. And I said, Tom, look, I want to grow in my time here. I want to become a better pastor, a better teacher, a better leader. And I think one of the things that's going to be important for me and my growth is I'd like to have the opportunity to preach in your pulpit once a month. Are you good with that? Now, people didn't do that, but I did. And Tom was very gracious about it, and he said, sure, if you want to preach once a month, I'll gladly have you preach once a month. In fact, in some ways, you'd be doing me a favor. And Tom was true to his word. And so I would talk to my buddies who were associate pastors at other large churches, and they said, hey, Ebel, how often are you getting to teach over there where you're part of the community? And I said, once a month. And they said, no way. I said, well, how often are you getting to teach? Once a year, twice a year. I said, ooh, that's tough. And it's not really a great principle of replication either, because if you're going to raise up future leaders, how do you not give them the opportunity to lead? And look, folks, if you give somebody who has any skill whatsoever a month to prepare a sermon, you ought to be able to knock it out of the park every time. And so I was not going to fail to deliver, right? Because I wanted to grow. I wanted to get better. I wanted to improve. I wanted to experiment. And Tom, he never wavered from that commitment. One time, Tom and I, we walked through a really tough season of ministry. There was a person at the church who started sending all kinds of letters to both of us, actually about 2 weeks after I arrived. And finally, the letters got so bad that the letter said, you need to remove this associate pastor that you've got from ministry, you know, even at the expense of his life. Clearly, the guy did not want me there. And rather than do what the denominational leaders did, which was write a very politically correct letter that, you know, you couldn't ever take offense to, Tom said, you know what, this guy, he needs to be removed from the church. And from that day forward, I'd have given my left arm for that guy. I'll never forget the day after 3 years of Tom pouring into me, that he knocked on my door and we thought that I would be leaving that year. And he said, "Brian, I'm leaving and you're staying." And when he sat down and he told me, we both cried like little girls. I'm not, you know, it's not a sexist term. I'm just saying, we just don't make it what it's not. I'm just saying, we just bawled. Because I loved this guy. I had given my left arm for him. He had poured himself, he had poured the ministry of Christ into me. And I still miss being with him. We get to have lunch a couple times a year, and it's like old times with Tom whenever I sit down with him. You know, the power of replication, whether you want to talk about Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick or Tom and Brian, it is a powerful spiritual principle that runs throughout the Bible. It happened from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob to Joseph. It happened from Moses to Joshua and David to Solomon and Jesus and his 12 and Paul to Timothy and Silas and Mark and Luke. And today we're going to even talk about Priscilla and Aquila. Here's the question for you folks. Who are the mentors? Who are the quarterbacks that have poured into your life? Who's replicated the playbook of the kingdom in you? And more importantly, who are you replicating the playbook of the kingdom in right now through your life? Who are you pouring into? You know, a couple weeks ago, Daryl encouraged you to come up with your 30-second elevator speech. Did you do it? Clearly, yes. So let's talk about that, and let's talk about how you are pouring life into people around you. Let's take a few moments. We'll dismiss our kids to Revolution Kids Church, and let's take a few moments to discuss. Who's poured into you? Shout it out. Dad, grandma, teacher, a friend, scoutmaster. Who are you pouring into? Grandchildren, students, coworkers, little brother. Yeah. Yeah. Replication. Powerful, powerful principle. And, you know, we see that today. And it starts when Paul leaves Athens and he travels 50 miles to a little town, well, not really a little town, but a decent-sized town named Corinth. Now, Corinth, I want you to think of this as the New Orleans of the ancient world. Okay, do we set up some images there for you? Good. It is a perpetual Mardi Gras in Corinth. Corinth is a seaport town. It is wealthy. It is filled with all kinds of cultural and political happenings. It has the temple of Aphrodite, which is the goddess of love. So you know it's got to be wild in Corinth. And at Corinth, in the temple of Aphrodite, there are 1,000 cult prostitutes at the temple of Aphrodite. Let your mind run wild for just a moment. Okay, now let's bring it back in, because it's church. Yeah, I mean, so Corinth, it is a wild, happening kind of place. If you ever want to read about Corinth and its struggles, you can read, Paul has two letters called 1st and 2nd Corinthians, and he talks about all the challenges of this infant growing church in the city of Corinth. It is wild. I mean, it is a wild kind of place, and Paul goes there, God sends Paul there, and Paul begins to run the playbook. Paul begins to go to the synagogues. Paul begins to go to the marketplaces. Paul's learning about the culture. Paul begins sharing the gospel with other people. And he meets two people named Priscilla and Aquila. Now, you wouldn't think it, but the order of these names is highly significant in the scripture that we read today. Now, in the ancient world, you have to remember that women were never... I shouldn't say never, but almost never, that's probably a little bit more accurate, almost never written into any kind of public record. You would typically not find a woman's name in any kind of public record in the ancient world. Their testimony would not be admitted into any kind of court because it was considered unreliable. Now, in the Bible, in this letter, which is a public kind of document, Priscilla's name is not only lifted up, but it is lifted up first before her husband. Well, why is that significant? Because it tells us not only in the ancient church, but as well as in Roman culture, Priscilla held a place of leadership. And so quite respectfully, I will disagree with our brothers and sisters who say that women should not hold a place of leadership in the church because we have evidence in the book of Acts that says otherwise. Small rant over. So Priscilla and Aquila, they meet Paul. They're in Corinth. They've been displaced to Corinth because of the edict of Claudius. And Claudius was the Roman emperor at the time. He sent 40,000 Jewish people out of Rome. Well, why would he do that? Well, because the movement within Judaism and now this growing movement of Judaism, which is now being called Christianity, it's beginning to upset his political power. And no emperor is going to allow that to happen. So he sends everybody out of Rome. Priscilla and Aquila, they head for Corinth. They set up shop. They are business owners. They're entrepreneurs. What are they? Some scripture translations will call them tent makers. Leather workers is probably a little bit better understanding. And they begin to run their own playbook, right? They begin to share the gospel. They begin to serve. They begin to do ministry in their workplace. They're reaching other people. And they've been with Paul and stay with Paul for a period of 18 months. And then we read this in the scripture. It says, Paul stayed on in Corinth for some time. Then he left the brothers and sailed for Syria, accompanied by Priscilla and Aquila. They arrived at Ephesus, where Paul left Priscilla and Aquila. Then he set sail from Ephesus. Now, why are we reading this? God's will for Paul, God's calling for Paul, was apostleship. He was there to raise up leaders and plant new churches. This is what he was called to do. And so Paul knows that, look, this is only a season for a certain time in Corinth. It's only for a season, a certain time in Ephesus. Now it's time to leave. But the amazing part is, what is it that Paul has done over a period of 18 months? He's replicated the ministry in two other people, Priscilla and Aquila, and now he's going to leave the church at Ephesus in a new town, in a new location, to them to lead. In short, what we might say is Paul was very much Alex Smith, and Priscilla and Aquila were very much Colin Kaepernick. They got an 18-month internship, and now it was theirs to lead. And not only so, we read that Priscilla and Aquila meet this man named Apollos. Now, Apollos is a man who is both Jewish and Greek, which is very, very significant. It means that he would have understood the scriptures. He would have understood who Jesus was and the importance of what Jesus did in dying on the cross and raising from the dead on the third day. He was thoroughly Jewish, but he was also thoroughly Greek. And so he would have had available to him the tools of the ancient world, how to use logic, how to use rhetoric, how to speak to the people of the culture. And we read that Apollos, he's got 90% of the message of the gospel, right? But he's missing a piece. We read this morning that he knew the baptism of John, which was a baptism of repentance, but he didn't know the baptism of the Spirit. The baptism of the Spirit, which comes and fills us and gives us the first fruits of salvation. The baptism of the Spirit that gives us spiritual gifts. The baptism of the Spirit that empowers us to be the hands and feet of Christ. And so what do they do? Do they stop the worship gathering and say, Apollos, you're killing us, man. You're doing it wrong. No. They take him by the hand. They invite them into their home. They show him hospitality. And it says that they explain the way to God, the way of God to him, more adequately. The amazing part of taking him aside, the word here, is a word that means to literally shape one's destiny. So they gave Apollos the missing pieces of information that he needed so as to shape his destiny. And that's exactly what happens, because Apollos would one day leave Ephesus, go to Achaia, and replicate the ministry that Paul had given to Priscilla and Aquila, that Priscilla and Aquila had given to him, and now he was sharing it with another part of the ancient world. You see the power of replication over and over and over again. Now, that's a great lesson for us. How do we replicate it? Think about what's happened in just a very short period of time. Jesus had 12. He sends them out to all the corners of the ancient world. Jesus encounters Paul on the road to Damascus. He shared it with Priscilla and Aquila. Priscilla and Aquila are replicating it in Apollos. And now Apollos is going to go to another town in the ancient world. How are we replicating the ministry of Christ in other people? And look, folks, sometimes it even requires a measure of confrontation to do it. Now, there's a word that we don't like to talk about as church folks, right? Because usually when we talk about confrontation, it becomes ugly and combative. It's the people who hold signs outside of other people's funerals, or it's sort of this stuff, right? The bless their heart, passive-aggressive behavior, like, oh, he's got it wrong. He's incredibly not smart or whatever. Oh, bless his heart. No. Notice what happens. Priscilla and Aquila, they take this man into their home. They don't bash him. They simply explain the way of God more accurately or more adequately to him. Folks, one of the greatest challenges in the lesson of replication is how do we, as leaders, as disciples, as followers of Christ, help other people be transformed without first feeling judged? Not easy, is it? How do you take someone by the hand and say, brother, I love you. You're missing a piece. Can we talk about it? Instead of saying, you've got all your doctrines wrong. Did you know? Now, how's that going to leave somebody feeling? Right? Hurt, lost. You know what I hear? You're doing it wrong. Not helpful. Not helpful. Can we come around, folks, and say, hey, listen. Listen to all the things you're saying. There's some pieces of the puzzle that don't quite fit yet, maybe, right? Yeah. Can we talk about those? Sure. I mean, most people don't walk through life saying, I don't want to have it figured out, right? I mean, this is why self-help books sell by the droves every January. So how can you be the missing puzzle piece in other people's lives? How can you replicate the ministry of Christ in other people's lives? Let me invite the band to come on back up. Folks, when we're talking about the power of replication here, a great team has a deep bench, don't they? I mean, you look at any great team, football, basketball, baseball, whatever, they have a deep bench. When one person goes down, somebody else can come in and take their place. When Alex Smith gets hurt, Colin Kaepernick can come in and still help lead him to the Super Bowl. And in a church, it's no different. How are you growing? Who's pouring into you? And who are you pouring into to help replicate the ministry of Christ, of living out the Great Commandment and the Great Commission? Let's continue to worship as we reflect on that. You know, let you in on a little secret today. God's not done with us yet. I know. God's not done with us yet. And when we set out to plant a church, we really weren't planting a church. We were interested in starting a movement. Do you get the difference? Church is just one place. Usually can reach one group of people. A movement sweeps across cultures and all kinds of different people. We're interested in starting a movement. In the next 2 years, well, let me rephrase this. How do I want to do this? When we started 4 years ago, we met in a little building. And, you know, the people who helped get Revolution started, I remember that first Sunday, and they had poured in all kinds of sweat equity, and the building went from looking like the Addams Family lived there to now it was inhabitable. And I said, isn't this great? Look at this wonderful place, and God has given us, and yada, yada, yada. And I said, don't get comfortable, because we won't be here long. And everybody went, you know, there was this look of total disbelief and shock. And what I'm going to tell you is this, don't get comfortable. We won't be here long. I appreciate that. One of our fellow actresses gave me a great look of shock and awe. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, you know, we're a little light today because it's fall break and that's how fall break works. But the deal is that if we continue to grow, if we continue to serve more people and reach more people for Christ, we're not going to be able to stay here forever. And that's the way that it's supposed to be. The church was never meant to be a building. The church is always intended to be a movement of people. And the building is simply a tool that you can use. Let me also encourage you that we said when we started, we were going to plant another church. So in the next 5 years, we're going to plant another campus. Don't get comfortable. Because it's coming. I mean, how many people do you know in your life that need Jesus? How many folks in the city of Louisville require, need to see the hands and feet of Christ in their lives? How many people would be blessed by a church family that isn't like other church families, that welcomes everybody, whether you're struggling or have it together? Because nobody really has it together. They just pretend better than other people. I mean, how many folks need that? Yeah, everybody does. You know, as we talk about a movement that fans into flame, as we talk about a movement that spreads like wildfire, you know who all of you are? You're the gasoline. I mean, it's that simple. And what has to change in us is this power and this process of replication. Our bench, folks, has to get deeper. Karen Garner and I were talking about Sunday school this past week. We're going to need more kids' Sunday school teachers because our kids' ministry is growing. So who's going to step up? We need folks to help park cars on Sunday morning. Say, well, that's not a big deal. It's not, but it is. Because if you see some grumpy old person at the door welcoming you in, is that a place that you really want to go to? Probably not. So it's a big deal. The way that we serve communion is a big deal. The way that we serve coffee is a big deal. We're going to have a fall festival here in a few weeks, where everybody gets together and they open their trunks and serves a bunch of candy. That's a big deal. Inviting people is a big deal. Showing up next Saturday to Family Scholar House to read with children is a big deal. Showing up at the end of October, the last Saturday of the month, down at 4th Avenue to serve is a big deal. We need folks who are willing to replicate the ministry of Christ, the transformation that's happened in them, in the lives of other people. And our bench has to get deeper, folks. If you're part of a renovation group, we're looking for more renovation group, small group leaders. And I know that there's all kinds of talk right now about, oh, you're going to divide my group. We're not going to divide your group. We're going to multiply your group. You know, at the end of the day, we're just given this short time to be here as we are. And yet eternity lasts forever, doesn't it? That's a long time. I still can't get my brain around that. What you do with it, it's all about that little dash, isn't it? When's the last time you've been to a cemetery? We don't really do cemeteries a whole lot because it's not really the most uplifting place, I mean, to go to. But if you think about it, there's a lot in that little dash, isn't there? Who's poured into your life as part of their dash? And whose life are you going to pour into as part of your own? I mean, this is what being a Christian is all about. Who are you going to take on the journey with you? Who are you going to bring with you? Who are you going to serve along the way? Who are you going to teach the way of God to more adequately? I mean, it's up to you. This church has got to go beyond its staff. It has to go beyond its current leadership. It's got to go beyond its current renovation leaders. I mean, it's game day, right? That's what we keep coming back to. It's game day. And the question that I'm asking today is, are you in? Are you in? Are you in? There's going to be more opportunities for you to get involved, and I hope you'll look for those on our website, in our app, Facebook page. Great way to get engaged. John Nolan's looking for parking team members. We'll put something out onto Facebook tomorrow about it if you're interested in serving. Next Saturday, you have an opportunity to go serve down at Family Scholar House. If you have the time to do it, great. And if you don't, you know what? There'll be an opportunity to serve at the end of the month down at 4th Avenue. And we're looking for people to help there. And if you're interested in teaching Sunday school, come find me or Karen Garner after worship today. We would love to connect you with a group. It's a 1 month a year, 4 Sundays a year commitment. Who doesn't love little kids? Come on. Let's pray.